We need to talk.
There's something I'd like to talk to you about.
I'm listening. Talk to me.
It's time to Talk It Over, starring Diane Diamond, Lee J. Berman, and Louise Palanker. Give us a call at 888-531-7171. Email us at talkitover@gmail.com. You can talk to me. Talk to me. Join us online at talkitoverradio.com. You can talk to me. Talk it over. Because we're ready to talk it over.
Welcome to Talk It Over. I am Louise Palanker, anchoring the home front, and we are far-flung this week. We have our reporter and our very famous news person, Diane Diamond, who has been called to New Mexico to deal with a plumbing problem, as news people often are wont to do. How are you, Diane?
I'm great. It's not a Watergate plumbing problem. It's a real bona fide leak of water plumbing problem.
Oh, yeah. So
it's been fixed.
It's not a news link. It's not a news leak. It's an actual leak. And Lee J. Berman is
water
in.
Leak.
Lee J. is drunk, and he's in Sonoma in wine country, and he's drunk. I'm just going to be very frank. Lee J., you're drunk.
Hold on, let me put my glass down.
Lee J., have you been drinking this afternoon up there? What's going on?
Moi? Oh, we've been tasting some amazing Pinot Noirs up here.
Fantastic.
And all why right. are you in Napa Valley? Are you just on a vacation, or what are you doing?
Actually, no. I was doing a mediation training for a bunch of lawyers for the Sonoma County courts up here. They got me coming up about every 3 months to do a training program up here for some judges, some lawyers, and it's been a lot of fun.
Because everyone's drunk.
Oh. Nice.
Wonderful.
Everybody is imbibing of the local product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you got to go work somewhere, it might as well be like wine country or a beach somewhere, right?
And it's very good for the economy to be drunk. So good for you. And
I think the economy actually is drunk, Louise.
Maybe I'm the one who's drunk. I don't know. Diane, what is going on in the news? It's been a crazy week news-wise.
It has been a crazy week. And, of course, here on this program, Talk It Over, we talk over any conflicts you have. And, of course, there's always conflicts in the news. But if you have one and you want to share it with us, give us a call at 888-531-7171, 888-531-7171, or you can just send us an email to talkitover@gmail.com. But in the news to this week, I mean, even today, Louise, did you see the latest in the O.J. Simpson case?
No, what's going on now?
Well, it's sort of the Michael Vick dog fighting school of talking it over. A man who was with O.J. Simpson and that posse that went into the Las Vegas hotel room when O.J. was demanding his memorabilia back has now flipped. He has agreed to testify in court that O.J. Simpson is lying, that indeed there were guns brandished in that room. This guy's name is Charles Cashmore, and he reveals that he had just met O.J. and these other guys at a bar just a few minutes before O.J. turned to him and said, "Hey, buddy, I got to move some things. Do you want to come with me and help?"
So didn't you predict this?
You predicted this. Charles...
You predicted this. You said there's no honor among thieves, and one of them... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, criminals are not choir boys, and, choir boys keep secrets, but criminals do not. This guy, though, Charles Cashmore is his name, and he was just a bartender, a local disc jockey there in Vegas, and suddenly he's standing next to O.J. Simpson in a bar, and O.J. is saying, "Hey, buddy, you want to help me move some stuff?" And he says, "Yeah, sure." Well, for his trouble, he is now facing 5 years in prison. I mean, it's a big deal. So, I guess really he needs to get a good attorney who can talk it over with the prosecutor and make him see, Lee J., that this guy, Charles Cashmore, was just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah,
but how does a defense attorney talk it over with the prosecutor?
I'll tell you, he was moving some stuff. He moved a gun up to a man's head.
And said, "Give me all your stuff."
Yeah, that's mine. That's mine. That's mine. So that's how I would defend the case, Lee J.
You know, it really is about rapport. His attorney, like Diane said, really needs to talk it over in the sense of building some rapport with the prosecutors and helping them understand that he will cooperate and that that he can be trusted. And it's really going to have to be a character test with how the attorney has a relationship with the prosecutor and what that relationship is like, and whether the attorney can convince the prosecutor to trust Charles Cashmore.
I don't know if you can trust a name like that. That name kind of says, give me more money.
I'll do anything for a buck, Cashmore.
Cashmore. Charles Cashmore.
It's an interesting, difficult conversation, you know, because what they really have to get down to is, can he be trusted, or is he just trying to weasel out of this? It's got to be what we call a below-the-line conversation, meaning it's got to be about their interests rather than just what they're willing to do in exchange for what.
It sounds like a load of bull to me to say, oh, OJ came in and asked me to move some stuff. Believe me, OJ told that guy what was going down and said, can you help us with this hit, which is basically what it was. You don't just ask someone to move some stuff. They have to know we're going to go in there and charge in there and we're going to brandish weapons and we're going to demand our stuff and we're going to haul it out of there. I don't believe the guy at all.
Nah.
Do you, Diane?
Well, yeah, I do, because, you know, Las Vegas. Las Vegas is a town like nowhere else, and people like nobody else. And this guy is a DJ in town, and he's a bartender and a day laborer. And he, you know, wow, all of a sudden he's standing next to O.J. Simpson. And it's that celebrity spotlight that blinds people. And he turns to Charlie Cashmore and he goes, yo, Chuck. They help me move stuff. And he goes, yeah, OJ, anything.
But don't you think OJ...
I can absolutely see that happen.
No, I can see that. I just can't see OJ taking some random dude that he picked up in front of Home Depot. He had to tell the guy, here's what's going to happen. Here's the way we're going to do it. Here's a drawing. Here's a diagram. We're going to come in from here. We're going to... You know, you strategize and you make sure everyone who's going in on it knows what their role is. You don't just pick up...
You know what?
Yeah,
Weezy, I like
your
thinking.
You're making OJ be much smarter.
That's my thought. I don't think OJ is that bright. I think OJ thought, I got my two wingmen who are going to have a gun. I just need another big body or two so these guys are overwhelmed when we come piling into the room. That would be my guess.
What if the guy stands there, freaks out, and pees his pants? You got to make sure everyone knows what's going down.
Maybe.
Well, he can still carry things out even with wet pants. You know, that's really all.
Last time we moved, I spent hundreds of dollars on a mover. So I think what I need to do is just get famous before we move again.
And guns.
So I can just walk into a bar and go, hey, dude, it's me, Lee J. Berman. I've got stuff to move. Want to come help?
You need to be famous.
And they'll say, yeah, man, anything for you.
Exactly.
Anything for Lee J.
Anyway, the bottom line is, you think that a good defense attorney can talk it over with the prosecutor and convince him, you know, this is not the bad guy. He's just a local laborer, and this is not the guy who should spend 5 years in prison. Maybe OJ should.
Yeah, exactly. And I think part of it's going to have to do, obviously, with the background walking in there, whether he has a criminal record or not and things like that. But it's a critical conversation, and it's one that his attorney is just going to have to be as convincing with the prosecutor as if he was in front of a jury. He's going to have to be that strong and solid.
Well, I think if they get good information out of him, they'll let him flip. It's a matter of who can you get convicted? You want to get the big fish. You want to get OJ. And
yeah,
so,
what do you have to share with us, huh?
Yeah, I'm sure that's how the game is played. If you want to call it a game.
And that's how they got the guys around Michael Vick. You know, they said, look, we're not after you. We're after the guy who opened the dogfighting farm and poured all the money into it. You know, we should probably say to our listeners that we are having some technical difficulties tonight. That's why we started a little bit late, and the quality of the sound may not be so great, but we're going to hang in there as long as we can. Maybe we should roll right along, though, just in case we do have to cut this program a little bit short. Let's talk next, you guys, about Marion Jones.
Diane, I think what we should say to our listeners is, really, it's not you, it's us.
It's us. And Diane, if you actually did speak with a stutter, it would be interesting to see how bad you would sound, because it sounds like you're speaking with a stutter.
Maybe that would correct for it.
Maybe that would compensate.
Like Porky Pig, right? Yes.
After we cover Marion Jones, we will have a phone call guest, and I'll get that set up while you cover that story here.
Okay. Go ahead.
Beautiful.
Oh, great. Okay. Marion Jones, of course, is the famous track and field runner who won all the gold medals in the Olympics in 2000. She finally has talked it over with federal prosecutors and decided to admit that she lied about taking steroids. She has to give back. She has already given back 5 gold medals. But now, Lee J noticed in many of the news reports that, what, Lee J, her teammates from the relay teams, I counted them up, it's 8 women in all, say, hey, wait a minute, we didn't cheat. We don't want to give back our medals. How did they talk that over?
Exactly, Diane. What happened is one of her teammates, her relay members on one of the relay teams, said, I don't think I should have to give mine back. I didn't cheat. And went on to say, this is going to make people question my character for the rest of my career, and I didn't do anything wrong. The problem is, had they run with somebody other than Marion Jones and the anchor leg, there's no way of telling if they would have still won the gold, but they might very well have without her, had they had just whoever else would have been the next in line to run in that relay team with
them.
And
why is she admitting to this now? Was she tested? Was she found out? Did she have to admit it?
My understanding
is
yes.
Yes, I think so. I think the federal authorities finally got enough evidence against her to prove that she was taking steroids. And they said, we either take you to trial, lady, or you admit, come out and admit everything and give your medals back.
And frankly, the biggest problem here is that she lied for several years, denying that she used the stuff. And everybody who's used the clear from Balco, which is what she's accused of using, has known what they were using and has come out and said, yes, we knew it, we suspected it, you know, we kind of had an idea what it was. And she denied it for all this time. So in addition to just having used the stuff, had she come clean and said, I didn't realize, I used it, gosh, I'm really sorry, they probably would have forgiven and forgotten. But instead, she denied for several years. And at this point, her credibility is a wreck. It's like somebody telling a lover, no, I'm not having an affair, and then getting caught red-handed.
Lee J, so, can I say something about this? I think what's happening, I just have some insight into this. I worked with a guy whose mother was a track coach at a major university. I won't say the name of it. He said, absolutely everyone uses. So yeah. They just have this group think, which is we all deny. We all use, yeah. We all deny. And it's probably going on internationally. So when they have these drug tests, they've learned how to cheat them. And occasionally one slips through the cracks where someone's actually caught and has to give back medals. But you can't compete at that level and not use when everyone else is using. So how do you talk that over, Lee J, when there's this group think that has made the wrong right or you're not in?
Well, it's just like baseball. There has to be an example made of somebody very public. And somebody has to be taken down from a very top rung before any of those who are coming up and trying to qualify to make the teams or competing on the teams have an idea that they're going to take the rules seriously. It's almost like if everyone on the freeway is driving 80 miles an hour, you sort of figure you have to drive 70 or 75 just so you don't get run over. Mm-hmm. But then suddenly when there's a highway patrolman or somebody out there with a radar gun and giving tickets at 57, 58 miles an hour, you say, hey, that's not fair. But the truth is the law's been 55 all along. So
right.
This is one of those things where they didn't enforce it. They didn't stay on top of it. It got so widespread that, like you said, Wheezy, everybody had to take it in order to compete. And because it's such a highly competitive arena, it's the same in every sport. Trish has a friend who played minor league baseball and said every one of the guys on his minor league team was using because if they're going to make it to the majors, they've got to be in the same physical condition as the major league ball players are. Mm-hmm. And they all figure they'll just stop using when they get to the pros in case they start getting tested up there.
Right.
So you got to take down somebody at the top rung like they took down Marion Jones. And then there has to be a different group think. They have to get together and say, look, from this day forward, you're going to be tested. So if you're going to run on our team, you don't use because we don't want to have somebody get stuck.
Well, it's just difficult for me to believe that the girls that are claiming they don't want to give back their medals didn't use as well. And that's what I find difficult. And I may be wrong. You know, I may be completely wrong about this. Mm-hmm. But she's the one who got caught. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, well, for all we know, the others were using.
We should say, though, that in a lot of the media coverage, USA Today and Sports Illustrated and a lot of them, the teammates, these relay teammates, 8 women in all, and they all say, we were not using. We shouldn't be punished. Why do we have to give our medals back? Well, of course, the answer is because the relay was won unfairly because of Marion
right.
Jones.
Well, the answer,
but they swear, I mean, you know, we should be fair here. They say that they were not using.
Well, it's tricky, but a relay is a team, and the team is the
exactly.
entity that won the event, not any individual.
Yeah,
and
it's just like if
team,
a basketball
the team
player
cheated. One person
yeah, if
cheated.
If a basketball player was cheating, the entire team would have to give its medals back. That this is a team event in an individual sport. So the entire team has to lose out. And they're absolutely right for being upset with her, and they certainly need to talk it over as a team. She needs to sit in front of them and apologize one by one to them. But,
and then
she can't make any other decision.
And then she should bake them all cookies.
Nope.
Yes. With nothing special
yeah.
in them.
We have a phone
hashish
call
in it.
With nothing special in them.
So before we go to our caller who is standing by with the conflict, let me just ask you one quick question here, Lee J. How does this relay team sit down and negotiate trying to keep their medals? I guess they don't sit down with Marion Jones. They sit down with the International Olympic Committee.
You know,
what to say to the Olympic Committee?
It's a great question, Diane. It wouldn't hurt for Marion Jones to be there either, and for her to cry her eyes out and apologize and say that her teammates shouldn't be penalized. And they've got to say, look, we were ahead through the first three legs. Anybody could have run that anchor leg, and we still would have been runaway winners. We didn't do anything wrong. We didn't test positive. It's a defensive, backing up, losing kind of an argument. But that's how they're going to have to talk it over. They're going to have to find everything in their favor that they can and appeal on logic, because they're not going to keep them on emotion. They're not going to keep them out of sentimentality. The only way that they're going to get to keep them is if they can make enough logical argument that they get to. And it's a shame that they're having to.
I think a good compromise would be like the time yeah. that the French judge was cheating or something. They should just share the gold with the team that got the silver.
That's
and we
a
have a caller, and we have to
yes,
move on.
Yes, we do. We've got Melinda on the line. Hello, Melinda.
Hi, guys.
Hello, Melinda.
Hello, Melinda.
Hi, Melinda.
Everyone.
Welcome to Talk It Over. How can we help you?
Well, I'm so happy that you guys are available to talk to me, because I have a big problem. I have been in a business for the past 15 years with one of my really good friends, and we did great for a while, and in the past 5 years, pretty much 6 years since 9/11, things have changed, and our business has changed, and our lives have changed. She had a baby. I got married. But I have more of like an entrepreneurial side, and I've started a new business, and I'm moving on, and I want to end this partnership. The problem is that we have debt, and she's going bankrupt. So it becomes this big issue of, do I, you know, I'll tell you what the business is. We run a summer camp, and it's pretty much guaranteed every year, and we make good money doing it. And what I wanted to do was give her the camp in exchange for her paying off our debts. And she is not so positive towards doing that. I'm not going to charge her anything for my shares of the company, which is, you know, she can do whatever she wants to do with it. She could grow it. She could, you know, it definitely has a value. So I got her to agree to a little bit of it, but it looks like things are changing now. Some of the money we thought we were going to get, we're not going to get. It looks like it's going to be a bigger sum of debt that needs to be paid off, and I just need some advice.
So my first question for you, Melinda, would be, what's the legal formation of your partnership? Is it a limited partnership, or what kind of – do you have contracts between you?
We're an LLC.
Okay, good. All right, so as an LLC, there are going to be corporate rules that govern that. And essentially, you're looking to sell her your shares of the LLC.
Pretty much right.
Yeah. And so you said it's kind of changing right now. Tell us more about that.
Well, we thought we were going to be getting some more income in, and we're not. So it's ending up, we had a discussion, and we thought it was going to be about that at the end, whenever we have a joint loan together that she can't put into her bankruptcy. And we thought we could pay it down a lot more than I think we're going to be able to. So it's about a $5,000 difference. I had her agreeing to maybe paying me $15,000 over 3 years. And, you know, I don't really mind if I have to wait 3 years to get paid. I just want to make sure that I don't lose money on this venture. We, you know, we did this for a long time, and we started our company in 1993. We've had great success, and we've been friends since we were 12. So, you know, I don't want any negative, but we have very different views on money, and she's in a very desperate situation. So it's looking more like $20,000 now, and it was really hard to get her to agree to $15,000.
Wow.
Okay.
And we run a summer camp that we're guaranteed to make about $35,000 a year.
Can you fake her death?
I think I've thought, she's my friend. That would look so bad, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So, Louise. So tell me, Melinda, your goal, if this could work out the way you wanted it to, tell me how that would look.
It would be that I would release all of my liability and all of my interest in the company to her, and that she would, whatever is left over in January after we do this in December, so whatever's left over in January, she's going to pay back, which is this joint loan that we have and one credit card that I'm out about $12,000. And that, you know, we could work a deal where she could pay it over years. Like, and this is all contingent that we secure camp again. We've never had a problem getting camp this year. This is the first year, of course, where we have to actually bid against another camp for camp. But it looks pretty good that we're going to be able to get camp. So the thing is, it's either I do this or I get nothing because she's going bankrupt and she has no money and she has no way of making money. She's not an entrepreneur like me.
I'm curious about how the bankruptcy would treat her shares of the LLC. They would be an asset. Her shares in the LLC would be a personal asset of hers that the court would take over, and essentially you'd be negotiating with the trustee in that sense. So the trustee would cut a deal with
you. The LLC is not going to be part of the bankruptcy. I mean,
if she's going bankrupt, the 50% shares of the LLC that she holds are still her personal asset.
Right.
So the LLC won't go bankrupt, but if she, it's an asset of hers personally that the trustee would take over management of to pay off the debt that she's trying to write off in the bankruptcy. You see what I'm saying? So essentially, you'd inherit a new partner.
There's a credit card that we have that's in her name that's business-related that the lawyer says that it's going to be included in the bankruptcy. But we have a joint loan that can't be part of the bankruptcy. And then I have I secured $12,000 of credit in my name. So we didn't have joint credit, really, besides that one loan. Like we personally secured it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right. And you're calling it a joint loan. So was it in the name of the LLC and personally guaranteed by each of you?
Yes, it's through our bank. So both of us are on the bank account. So it's a loan through Citibank.
Okay. So you've got a Citibank loan that's in the name of the LLC.
Right.
Okay.
And I personally have about $12,000 and she has about $20,000 personally.
Okay. So she's got 20 personally.
Saying, well, I'm going bankrupt. I'm getting rid of the $20,000. And I said, well, that's your choice. You know.
How bad is her debt? What do you know about the debt that she's trying to discharge?
It's very bad. I mean, I don't know for sure because it's not about my company so much. It's about she's got lots and lots of other credit cards. I mean, I would say it's in excess of $80,000. That's not very bad in the realm of life, but for us, it is. You know.
Right.
I mean, I know multi-million-dollar companies go bankrupt for multi-million-dollars, but you know, when we're a small summer camp. Going bankrupt for $80,000 right. isn't, you know, what you want to have to do.
Well, the most important thing at this point is for you to keep distinct the LLC as an entity from you and she as individuals. Because when you say things like, you know, we have a joint loan together, we have a joint credit card together, if those are personal, the bankruptcy court's going to treat those differently than if they are held by the LLC and guaranteed by her. So you've got to look at, she's going to lose the 20.
Right.
And she's going to lose her shares of the LLC as the court steps in to try and liquidate what she does have for the benefit of the creditors that she owes the $80,000 to.
She has nothing, though. There's nothing to liquidate.
Right. And has she already filed?
No, she's going to file. And that's another thing that I want her to, as a contingency, this has to be all done by, I mean, I want it to be done by Thanksgiving. So she files bankruptcy as part of our agreement. And I, you know, and she pays off the rest of the debt and she gets summer camp after the bankruptcy is done.
I tell you the way to do this, the most effective way, really the ideal way would be for you to have a bankruptcy attorney that you hire just sort of by the hour. You say, I need you to come sit in a meeting with me and give me a little bit of advice and then I'll know more whether I need to retain you or not. But you hire a lawyer for an hour or two to go sit with her and the bankruptcy lawyer that she's consulting with and make sure that they structure everything in such a way that it protects you and your interests while she does what she has to do. But the minute she files, her shares of that LLC that you share with her now belong to the court, and you will have a partner in the trustee the minute she files, which means that getting anything done that you want to get done is going to be difficult. But now the lawyers can give you advice and strategy about whether she can acquire your business, you know, your shares of the business in exchange for, you know, the paying off the debt and that kind of thing. The problem is any transfer like that or any payoff of any loans that she makes within 90 days of filing bankruptcy, the court calls those preferential payments and can actually reverse them. If you've sold her your 50% shares in exchange for paying off the debt and you've taken no more cash than that, they can still call that a preferential payment.
Okay, and they can make, wait 90 days to do that?
They can literally unwind your transaction with her. Does that make sense?
Kind of. No, but what you're saying is within 90 days. So if we waited 3 months after her bankruptcy to do this, which is what we'd probably do if she was in November, it wouldn't happen until the following, probably March.
No, it's actually the other way around. If you do it up to 90 days before she files, then they can unwind it. But once she files, then the court is now your partner. And you're going to have to work with a trustee to get anything done you want to get done. And that's going to slow you up.
Now, what if she's not putting our company at all or anything about it into this bankruptcy? I think that's what her plan was.
Well, I don't think she's got that choice. I don't know if she's talked to a lawyer yet. And
yeah, she
definitely
has a lawyer, and she basically told the lawyer the situation that she didn't want anything that has to do with me involved in this bankruptcy. That it's just they're going to put certain things into it, and it's not going to be, it won't affect me at all, is what she's saying.
But if her shares in the LLC are an asset that she holds, just like if she held stock in AT&T on the stock exchange, they would seize that to pay off the debt that she's trying to discharge. They'll seize her shares in your LLC the same way.
Right. Well, we don't have anything. We don't have any money. So what are they going to seize?
Well, half of the company, and then they could force the company to be liquidated or something like that against your will. So what I'm really saying is I think the two of you need to get together with at least her lawyer. I would recommend you have one there just for that meeting also, and try and figure out a way to protect your interest and the company, and see if you can accomplish what you want to accomplish, which is selling your shares to her in exchange for her paying off the debt.
Right.
The problem is, if you know now that she's going to file bankruptcy and she assumes your half of the debt, the creditors could challenge that in the bankruptcy court too.
Even though the debt is in her name only and I have my own stuff in my own name?
Oh, no. Only if the debt was in the name of the LLC.
And I thought I understood that. The only thing that's in the name of the LLC is this loan that we're not putting in the bankruptcy.
Okay.
So I think we're going to skirt that issue. But my problem is I'm going to end up holding the bag here with the loan to the bank. So I wanted to get her to drink.
My problem is I don't understand what you guys are talking about.
I know. It's just so grown up. I don't know what happened. I don't know how we got into the situation. Anyway, that's good advice, though, to have a bankruptcy attorney. But as long as what you're saying is as long as we're not putting anything that I share with her into the bankruptcy, I'll be pretty much okay?
That's true. But in terms of debts, yes. But in terms of assets, I don't know how she gets through the bankruptcy listing her shares in the LLC unless she is able to list them at a zero value, in which case they may have an audit and they may look at you and say, well, you guys have debt and no assets, so they might take their hands off of it and you're okay.
Right. I mean, because the bottom line is we only have what we make, and what we make goes to these debts that we had, because we used to have we had two companies, and one company is in a lot of debt. We're owed a lot of money. We actually have a judgment against us. That's something else that I didn't think about. I mean, a judgment for us, but we're never going to collect on it. So,
Melinda, it's pretty clear you're going to need some legal advice about this, but the most important component about talking this over is to make sure that your partner's on the same page you are and to sit down and talk it over with her in terms of finding out what her plans are going forward. Is this bankruptcy changing her mind about doing the camp next summer or taking over your half of it? Once she's filed and the bankruptcy is discharged, then she can take over your half the next day.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lee J, before we close this topic, do you have anything to say in terms of advice about people going into partnerships with very good friends and or family members?
Well, you know, people say traditionally don't go into business with friends or family members, and it's tempting because you feel like you know each other and all that sort of thing, but it's also dangerous because you may not have the same goals in the friendship.
Right. In
this example, it sounds to me like she had some other problems that had nothing to do with your business.
Shopping.
Sounds like
eating out every day.
And it sounds like this wasn't one of those bad partnerships. But whether a person is a family member or a friend or just a business associate, what's most important about any business partnership before you enter into it is sitting down and having the long, difficult conversations about your mutual goals and about how you would handle things if they went badly. A partnership's a little bit like a marriage. Everybody wants to talk about all the happy things and the great marketing ideas and, oh, we're going to, you know, open lots of locations, or we're going to market it this way or that way. And nobody wants to talk about what if it goes bad.
Right, how do we end
this? Exactly, yeah. You know, let's just say that this thing fails. How are we going to handle the debt? Or, you know, let's just say that one of us decides after a year or two that our life's changed and we want out. How do we have a buyout provision that makes sense so that we're not bickering when it happens?
Right.
And those conversations are the ones that most folks don't want to have before they got in. It sounds like you and your partner are communicating really well about this, Melinda, and it sounds like you've thought it through a lot. And I commend you on that. It sounds like you've had good conversations and you've thought through the strategy. A little bit of legal advice to make sure that she can do what she's telling you she wants to do is a good thing.
Right.
But other than that, it sounds like you two are on the right track.
We are. I just got to get her to agree to pay over it. I mean, I don't care if it takes 4 years. She can pay me over 4 years. I just don't want to be out of pocket on this whole thing, you know, because because I'm the one who's responsible and who has money to pay the debt.
Mm-hmm.
Not fair.
And so to answer Wheezy's question, Melinda, one of the things I'd be very careful, regardless of how good of friends the two of you may be and that you've been running this camp successfully for several years now, one of the things you want to make sure is when she says, I'll pay you over 4 years, make sure you get a note and a deed of trust or something in writing from her so that you're secured in the event she doesn't pay.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons it might help to have an attorney attend the meeting with her, so that you can say, it's not me, the attorney's insisting that I'm covered and wants to make sure that I have this.
Right, that's a good idea, so I'm not the bad guy.
Yeah, exactly. Because the worst thing in the world, especially if you go separate ways, the worst thing in the world is a year from now, she says, why am I writing her another $5,000 check?
Right.
And suddenly you're out there unsecured and having to call her and beg, and then the friendship really goes sour.
Right. Okay, well, so I guess I got to find a bankruptcy attorney now.
Yep.
Woohoo! Yay!
Well, if you want to shoot me an email, I can give you some names and phone numbers of bankruptcy attorneys that I know who are pretty good. You know, on the other hand, I think that's probably the best way to proceed is to get your own, just to attend the meeting with her and hers one time, just so that you know everyone's on the same page.
All right, that sounds like a great idea. Thanks so much. That's really, I didn't even think about that, but that's a great idea.
Wish you a lot of luck with this.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Melinda, for bringing us your problem.
Thank you. Sorry it was so long and, you know, complicated.
No, it's one everyone can
relate to. Well, like you said, it's very grown up, and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I feel so grown up now.
All right.
All right, guys. Have a good show.
Thanks for calling Talk It Over.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
So, Lee J, I was reading in the news about a dentist in Woodland Hills who apparently has been accused of fondling the breasts of 27 female patients. He's trying to keep his dental license by arguing that chest massages are an appropriate procedure in certain cases. Mark Anderson's lawyer says dental journals discuss the needs to massage the pectoral muscles to treat a common jaw problem, temporal mandibular joint syndrome. So there was one woman specifically who's complaining and saying that she knows he does this. And so she was wearing something with a very high collar, and he was still able to get in underneath her collar and underneath her bra and massage away her problems. I'm looking at my own body. I don't see my breasts as being very near my TMJ. Anyone else?
So Wheezy, help me out. Were these women anesthetized?
No. They were just letting him do it because doctors can say this will help, and people sort of let them, I guess.
Wow.
So what went on was, police say Anderson said during recorded phone calls that he routinely massaged patients' chest to treat temporal mandibular joint disorder, or TMJ, which causes neck and head pain. Attorney Robert Zero told administrative law judge Jonathan Lou at a hearing Tuesday that he should let Anderson keep his dental license while disciplinary appeals proceed. Anderson would be supervised by two assistants and would no longer do the chest rubs. That's a good...
I'll tell you, the first thing that comes to my mind, the third thing that comes to my mind is, fool me once, shame on you. Fool
right.
me twice, shame on me. I mean,
or
the,
I just
you're
want
saying
my breasts.
Some of these women... Some of these women went back repeatedly.
I say fool me twice.
And are now complaining.
I say fool me twice. I'm enjoying this.
Yeah. I mean, if he does it to you the first time and you go back again and he does it to you again, that shouldn't be a surprise. Or you have, where is the talking it over here? Why isn't one of the patients saying, wait, stop, what are you doing? And then he explains this technique and this procedure, and she gets to say, no, thank you, or okay, if you think it'll help. But at some point, there's got to be a conversation there.
Well, I think it's one of those things where women sort of go along with it because they think they're supposed to, or they think that if he's telling them that if I massage these muscles in your chest, that this will help your pain, and they want the pain to go away, and they're listening to a doctor. I think doctors can get away with lots of different behaviors when patients don't really know to question them or don't think they're supposed to. And then as soon as one person goes public with it, 27 other women go, oh my God, he massaged my breasts too.
I think, first of all, let's just make an announcement. For all the women listening to this, you don't have to go along with anything. Let's be really clear. It's your body. And if somebody tries to do something that makes you uncomfortable, you have the right at any time to stop and ask and say, help me understand this.
Believe
if he says, oh, there are articles that say that if I rub your pectoral muscles, your TMJ will go away, I would say, great, show me the articles.
Okay, but here's the issue, Lee J. My entire gynecological exam makes me very uncomfortable, but I still know that she's supposed to be down there doing something or other. But I don't stop her. So as women, we don't really know. That's why we don't really know when to say, wait a second, are you supposed to be manipulating that particular muscle?
And so what I would say, Wheezy, is that no patient, male or female, in any circumstance, should be in an uncomfortable position where they don't know what's happening to them or why it's happening. Patients need to talk it over with their doctors. And sometimes in today's world, because of how insurance companies and doctors have been fighting for so many years, doctors get into this rush you in, rush you out mode. And they take a very assumptive approach as they're dealing with their patients. And the thing that patients have to do is say, stop, slow down, I need to understand what's going to happen and how this is going to help. I need to understand more about what you're about to do. And frankly, if you've got a doctor that says, I don't have time for this, then it's time for a new doctor. Because doctor-patient relationship, if you can't talk it over with your own doctor, who's going to be putting hands on your body, then who can you talk it over with? Your doctor's there for your health and your safety and your well-being. And that's who you ought to be able to talk it over with, like your own parent or sibling.
Also, if he's sweating profusely and wants to smoke a cigarette after the exam, you're not going to the right doctor.
Yeah, I would think that this is one of those where you want to reach down into his crotch and grab a hold and say, you proceed gently and so will I, doctor. And know that if he does anything that makes you uncomfortable, you've got the brakes in your hand.
Well, that is a very thorough dental exam, is it not?
Yep.
Next time I go, I'm going to floss between my breasts just to make sure I'm tidy for him.
Mint-flavored cleavage, is that what you're going for?
All right. Well, we're having so many technical difficulties today that in fact, we've lost Diane. She's somewhere in New Mexico attending to a plumbing problem, but Skype is being very pesky.
I'd say she should have turned left at Albuquerque, but she's in Albuquerque.
Yes. So we're going to say thanks for being with us and repeat the phone. I would repeat the phone number if I knew it. Do you know
it's 888-531-7171, 888-531-7171. Leave us a message anytime this upcoming week, and we'll use it next Saturday in the show. Or you can email us at talkitover@gmail.com. Visit our website at talkitoverradio.com.
And
Wheezy, before we leave, should we talk just briefly about the window vents in Utah?
I love that story.
Sure, if you have the story in front of you.
There's a situation where two neighbors failed to talk it over, and this is the perfect example. And we'll put it up on our website for everybody who's listening. This is the perfect example of what happens when you don't talk it over. A neighbor downhill of an existing home bought a piece of land and went to build a home. The home went up a couple of stories. It was almost perfectly within the zoning code. But what happened was the uphill neighbor said, you're blocking my view of the mountains that I've had for all these years, and that view is important and critical to me, and yada, yada, yada. And that neighbor says to the downhill neighbor, you need to make your house shorter. The downhill neighbor says, the hell I do. So the uphill neighbor goes to the city, to the zoning authorities, who come out and measure and find that the house was built 4 feet over what the zoning and the code allowed. So they made him drop the roof line on his house and redo the architectural plans and stopped his construction and made him drop the roof 4 feet to preserve more of the mountain view for the guy behind him, mm-hmm. because it fit within the zoning codes. Mm-hmm. So when he rebuilt that top section of his house and rebuilt the roof line, he put a vent. You know, we always have a vent in the attic so the hot air can escape from the attic and it can help equalize the temperature of the house. Well, this guy built a vent that has to be 4 feet wide and 6 feet high, that it, if you look at the website, and we'll have it up by Monday or Tuesday, at talkitoverradio.com, you'll see what this vent looked like. But to me, it looks very much like the silhouette of four fingers with one extended and three bent over, like somebody is flipping the bird at his neighbor. As every time the neighbor looks out the window, he sees the outline of a hand with a finger up out his window. That's what happens when two neighbors can't talk it over.
Wow. Well, that's a that's a statement.
Yeah, that says, okay, you think you got me? You can look at this for the next 20 years. And frankly, I can't wait to read what the uphill neighbor does next to get him back, because when they don't talk it over, it's just going to keep escalating.
Right. This is not over.
But this one's comical.
This is, and it's a great picture. You sent me it, and we'll put that on our website. It's very hilarious.
Fantastic.
Inventive, but mean-spirited. Because I saw you can also see the view that's being blocked by that house, and you can sort of understand it.
And the uphill neighbor is a city councilman, by the way.
The uphill neighbor is a city councilman?
Yeah.
I missed that. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Oh, so this is over then.
Oh, no, this is not over by any means.
Nope.
This will be the Hatfields and the McCoys for the next 20 years.
Yes, we'll be updating this story next week.
Yeah. They just couldn't sit down and talk it over, and this is what happens.
Nope, they couldn't. All right, thank you so much for being with us and being patient with us this week, and we will see you next week, and we are Talk It Over and out.